Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm Ann Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers from Blizzard Watch, and I've got both of my wonderful co-hosts with me today. First up, the other lore writer from Blizzard Watch, and that would be Matt Rossi. Hey, Rossi.
Hello.
How's it going?
I just had a dog sit on my head as we were about to start doing this.
Oh.
Like I was on the couch waiting. I was literally after an alarm set for 2:30, so I'd come up for the recording.
Okay.
And as the alarm went off, the dog jumped up on me and jammed her tongue so far up my nose that I feel like I've just been squeegeed internally.
Okay.
Well, welcome to puppy ownership.
There you go. Yeah.
I don't think it could possibly taste good up there, but apparently she's real interested.
Okay. Well, since you already piped up our other co-host, of course, it would be Joe Perez. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm not getting my nose squeegeed by an enthusiastic dog, so there's that.
That's very true. That's very true.
All right. So we're back from BlizzCon. And BlizzCon was kind of a mixed bag in terms of lore reveals and things like that. We got more information on upcoming patches and stuff than anything else. And I don't know about you guys, but I still kind of have to sift through it all. I almost don't really want to talk about that upcoming stuff until it actually gets here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like we've been burned about that before in the past, though.
Yeah. Because the problem is when we discuss stuff that hasn't been released yet, chances are that stuff will change between now and when it is actually released. So
what is there to actually talk about that we didn't know?
I mean, I don't know. The only thing Sargeras stuff.
That stuff isn't new. We knew we were going there. I mean,
7.1.5 stuff. I don't know.
There really isn't a lot of. The only new lore is the reveal at the very end of the performance, I'm calling it. But, you know, at the very end of the presentation.
Yeah.
When he basically mic dropped Argus and left. And that's.
Yeah.
We even knew that. Like, we weren't, like, none of us were surprised.
We were pretty sure we were going there. I mean, I thought it was going to be, like, an expansion and not a patch. But I'm okay with it being a patch. So today, instead of talking about BlizzCon stuff, we're going to talk about a subject that I find absolutely fascinating, and I think you guys probably find it pretty fascinating, too. We got an email from somebody, and I'm going to go over this email, and then we're just going to kind of jump right in, okay? So this email is from David, and it says, "Hello. The discussion about the Great Cycle in the last Lore Watch episode made me think about the time disruption that happened in the War of the Ancients novel. The old gods created the time rift, right? I reread some passages recently, but I wasn't able to decide whether or not they managed to do what they were trying to do. Crassus theorizes that they want to redirect the Well of Eternity portal to their prison to break free, but we have no idea what their plan actually was. At some point in the novel, Illidan casts a spell on the portal, and Tyrande senses that his powers are greatly augmented by the old gods during this spell. If I recall correctly, nothing prevents Illidan from completing that spell. Again, if I remember correctly, it's never explained what the effects of that spell was. It's never referred to again. What if that spell there, at that moment, did something which affects... And the effects of that spell will only appear sometime in the future. What if the great cycle is the fact that time has to be relived again up to the point where the old gods decided they needed to change time to make their escape happen, like their last gambit right before they're truly defeated? Thanks for Lore Watch and everything else you do at Blizzard Watch. You're the best. So
I already have three ideas here.
Okay, well, before we jump into that, what we're going to talk about today, we're going to kind of address that question, but not really, because what we're going to talk about today is time travel, and time travel in the Warcraft universe, and the Bronze Dragon flight, and cycles, and alternate universes, and why don't we just jump into it, right? There are several points in time where there appear to be some kind of split. And the first one is where you're talking about here, David, where it's the War of the Ancients, because we had the original history, and then that history was changed when Crassus and Ronan and Broxagar went back in time. And it's obvious that the Broxagar version is the correct version, because that's what we're seeing reflected in Legion. Like, every vision that we have of the past, if you go back in the vision of the past and that whole journey, Illidan's journey, you'll see Crassus there. You'll see Broxagar there. You can even do a quest with Broxagar. It's pretty cool. So it's obvious which of these is canon, but yeah, what happened to the other stuff? And Rossi, you said you've got three theories to talk about, so I'm just going to let you go.
Well, the first one is you have to look at this not from the perspective of when the portal gets opened in our time and then you go back. You look at it first up from the perspective of time back then. Illidan casts a spell, it's greatly augmented by the old gods, and it does something, and we don't know what it does. That doesn't have to have anything to do with time travel. There's nothing that says that what Illidan did is related to time travel in any way. However, it's very possible that what Illidan did is open the time rift that brought everybody there in the first place. And that would make the most sense, because Illidan could have cast that spell and been affected by the old gods before Crassus and Ronan.
So he started the spell that put Nazdarmu in jeopardy, that made him send the other guys to the past?
That's possible. It's okay. Not necessarily the case. The thing about time travel is you have to think of it in terms of like a board. Like, you're not moving just through space. You're moving through time. You are taking actions after their consequences and before their consequences. You know, cause doesn't have to follow. It doesn't have to precede effect. It can follow it. When you're doing that kind of thing, the first rule of temporal mechanics is always, you know, how do you ground yourself so you're not affected by any changes you make? The old gods, obviously, they're void beings. They're from the great dark, not from the great dark beyond. They're from literally the void. They were sent here by the void lords. They essentially, the void would probably be a good place to be if you want to alter time, because the void has there's nothing there. It is literally negation. It is void. So whether or not Illidan had anything to do with that portal in the beginning of the book, which is, you know, the book series, really, if you think about it in terms of Illidan boosted by the old gods, what are they boosting Illidan to do? And why doesn't Illidan care? And why doesn't Tyrande really care? Like, you know what I mean? Like, Tyrande notices it, and then we're just kind of like, meh, oh well.
Yeah, that always struck me as a little bit weird. Like, if she truly did notice that, why was there no action taken? Because she seems totally like the type of person that would be like, yeah, this probably isn't good.
Maybe that's something that needs to be addressed, and yet she doesn't address it. Yeah.
It's really one of those situations where, in terms of what the old gods were after, keeping in mind that we know they're unfathomable entities, they don't think like we do, and they don't act like we do. They're beings that will totally start a plan and seemingly are totally okay with dying, because dying to them is barely even an inconvenience. Like, the entirety of Olduwar leads to us going in to step on Yogg-Saron, and he doesn't even care. Like,
nope.
He's barely even inconvenienced. So we'll keep that in mind. If the whole purpose of altering the War of the Ancients is for what? What is the reason to bring back? And keep in mind, too, the old gods aren't the ones that sent those three back. That was Nosdormu. The old gods were attacking Nosdormu, assuming that they are the ones who were even behind it, which we're in a weird place now where we have the Infinite Dragonflight has a lot of really weird irons in the fire. One of the things I've noticed about them is that they seem to have a lot in common with both the Old Gods and the Nazarethim.
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit of both, isn't it? The other thing that I want to talk about as far as the Old Gods go, you know, you're talking about how they're kind of like floating out there in the indistinct void. This is kind of, it's almost verified. If you go into the Arcatraz, last boss in the Arcatraz, Harbinger Skyrus?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that he says is that he bears allegiance to powers untouched by time and unmoved by fate. Like, he's part of this whole Old God thing, and this Old God thing spans the universe as countless as the stars. I think he said that he was merely one of infinite multitudes. So yeah. They're very much, they're like the Legion in that they, you know, all realities, all dimension, all time, they exist everywhere at once.
Except they're kind of the opposite of the Legion.
Yeah.
In that the Legion are very much, you don't see time travel from the Legion, ever. Mm-hmm. The Legion never time travels. Like, go and look at every time the Legion's
universes,
ever in person,
yes.
But not time.
No, time, because they exist everywhere simultaneously.
Whereas the Old Gods have no problem with time travel.
Well, I was going to say, we kind of talked about that before in one of the previous episodes where we were talking about warlords in particular, and the Legion doesn't seem to have a handle on time travel, and they need somebody else to do it for them. And that seems to be the case, whereas the Old Gods, I think they are the fact where anything that's a void entity seems to exist, like, sort of...
I don't think that
multiverse theater
somebody.
Where they just, they're always there?
Yeah, I don't think that the Legion needs somebody to do it for them. I think they just, like... Dominoes have been set up, and maybe it's all part of this whole cycle thing, but let's get back to the War of the Ancients for now, though, because obviously there was something going on there with the Old Gods, even if the War of the Ancients didn't really involve them, because the War of the Ancients was very, very much about, you know, factional divide between the Night Elves, the Highborn, Shara trying to bring the Legion in, the Legion fighting the Night Elves, and everyone else for that matter, trying to bring Sargeras to Azeroth, and the Old Gods didn't really seem to have much of a hand in that until you got to the end of the book, when it was really blatant that they were talking to Ashara, and they kind of stepped in once everything had failed. Why didn't they step in before then?
Because they don't care either way. They're into chaos.
Yeah? Well,
they didn't say as much.
I was going to say, not only that, but I mean, even if the Legion successfully gets to Azeroth and, you know, quote unquote, reorders things, all that's going to do is free them from whatever prisons that they're restricted to. The chaos, like you said, it's going to feed them. It's going to give them whatever they're looking for as far as like, okay, well, we have our long-term plan. And I think the reason we didn't hear anything from them is because up to that point, everything was fitting into that long-term plan of theirs. Like the Legion coming, everything, because remember, they don't fear the Legion. They don't care about the Legion. They don't think that they're a problem at all for very good reasons. They don't care.
Let's look at something else to consider as well. When Loken takes over Ulduar, Loken is terrified, absolutely terrified that Algolon will come.
Yeah.
Yogg isn't even remotely afraid of this. Yogg goes so far as to convince Loken he should set things up so that when he dies, Algolon will be summoned.
Do you think that Yogg-Saron and the rest of the Old Gods know that the Titans died?
I don't really know. That's an interesting question. They might, in fact, know, because they would have had access to Loken.
Yeah, I would imagine that they do.
Is that why they're so blasé about, yeah, go ahead, get the reorigination device. We don't care.
No, I think
it's not like anything is going to come of it. The Titans are dead. Do you think that they're aware of that? Because obviously the Titans, the last essence of their spirits or whatever came to Azeroth.
I think it goes beyond that. Like, so, and I brought this up, this analogy beforehand, where like Azeroth is a system, and what is the Old Gods, what is their purpose here on Azeroth? So the corrupt, infest, and take over, right? Essentially, they're a virus entering a system. Well, if the virus has complete integration with the core of the system, and you don't eradicate it, you can't eradicate it, and you reconfigure the system, you reinstall it, if it's still in that initial kernel, if it's still in that seed, all you're doing is giving it root access to that base point from the point of origination. So in my mind, they don't care if Azeroth gets reordered. Great, let it be reordered. You're just pushing us deeper into the core system. You're getting us to the places we can't touch, because we're so integral to the system now that when you rebuild everything, we're now fully 100% part of it. I think it potentially would fit their plans. Yeah, absolutely. Summon your celestial beings to reorder everything. We're already here. We're here to stay. There's nothing left to kill us or remove us.
I already disagree with you, because that's not how the reorigination is going to work. We've seen how reorigination works. The reason that there's a desert in Uldum is because of how reorigination works. It doesn't rebuild. The Halls of Origination straight up are just going to kill everything. They're not going to rebuild Azeroth as a new thing.
It just raises everything to dust, pretty much, so that the Titans can come back and start over.
Yeah, like, and maybe that's, I am willing to believe that they're, if they know that the Titans are dead, then they're like, sure, kill everything. But the thing is we know reorigination, when it is used, just destroys everything. It's just gonna straight up kill everything.
And even that would fit them, right? Like, even that would fit them, because, I mean, they don't need necessarily to have indigenous life, right?
No, well, here's the thing. They wanted the Halls of Reorigination to the point where they had Deathwing trying to get them.
Yeah.
They want to push that button. They tried to get Algolon to do it. When he didn't do it, they tried to directly seize control of the Halls of Reorigination and push the button themselves. They're totally okay with scouring this planet of life because, and this is what a big thing to me, I think they understand better than anyone how dangerous we are.
Oh, yeah, I would
agree. There's a thing. One of the quotes from Ilgiloth or whatever, I can't say the thing's name, the evil tree monster in Emerald Nightmare. It says things like, flesh is its gift. He is your true creator. The reason they keep trying to use organic life is because they recognize in it something that the Titans never did. The synthesis of the Titan, you know, Titans created the Titan Forge before they were corrupted, before the Curse of Flesh. They recognize in them the ability to join order and chaos together. The old gods are all chaos all the time, and you can do a lot with that, but you can't build with it. The old gods' empire wasn't built. It was just spawned. It was just, you know, literally from the flesh of the old gods came these monstrosities, the Naraki and the Karaji. They just oozed them. They couldn't build anything. Their citadels were literally them. They didn't have an empire, really. You know, we call it the Black Empire, but it wasn't really a nation of any kind. There was nothing there. They didn't build anything because it was just them.
Yeah, and if they could have built everything, if they could have actually done, you know, the same thing, even on even a tenth of the level of like the Titans did with origination and building the races, they probably would have overrun the entirety of the planet without any sort of hesitation, right?
The whole thing, yeah. And the other thing is, the whole thing the old gods are here about is to corrupt Azeroth and create a void Titan, because they can't do it themselves. If the old gods, or the void lords for that matter, were capable of truly building in this reality, they'd already have won. They don't have the capacity. They need that servant. They need a Titan to come along and do things for them. That's why they want a void Titan in the first place. And think about it. It's weird because the Legion and the old gods both kind of represent different aspects. One of them is destruction to prevent creation, and the other is literally just destruction because of, you know, the idea of corrupted creation. And they're both flip sides of this destructive coin. Neither of them make anything anymore. The Legion in particular is like, every time it looks like they make stuff, the stuff they make is just to ruin other things. So they kind of have creativity, but it's warped and twisted. And the old gods don't even have creativity. They can't create anything. They can only corrupt it.
They don't have hands. Okay.
But to get back to the time travel thing, like we were talking about, one of the things that's always fascinated me is that the it was Amon-Thul, I believe, who empowered Nosdormu.
Yes.
And it was Amon-Thul who selected him and said, this is what you have to do, because there is one true timeline, though others will have it different. And that's always fascinated me, because how do the Titans know there's one true timeline? Do they just mean, well, the timeline that makes us happen is the one true timeline? What are they getting at? What does that really mean? And now that Nosdormu has basically given up being an aspect, is there anybody guarding that one true timeline anymore? Is there any protection for it? And that comes back to this whole idea of, we're talking about the circle and how, you know, the circle, does it connect to the spell Illidan cast? Does it connect to the old gods trying to create the time portal in the first place? What were they doing? Why were they going after Nosdormu? What does it have to do with, say, Murazond, and the thing that Murazond creates? Murazond, at his death, calls out to Amon-Thul. He doesn't call out to the old gods. He calls out to Amon-Thul. He believed he was doing the right thing. So why? Does he believe that because he's corrupted, or was he not corrupted? Did he say, oh God, I gave up my power and I can't guard the true timeline and now everything's going wrong. I have to find a way to safeguard the one true timeline. Because as far as we know, Nosdormu is still going to turn into Murazant. And, you know, we don't have any way of knowing, is that the cycle?
It's actually kind of interesting, because if you look at the dialogue from that dungeon, obviously Murazant, when he dies, he says, you know not what you've done, Amon-Thul, what I have seen, and then he just dies, right? But Nosdormu says, at last it has come to pass, the moment of my demise. The loop is closed, my future self will cause no more harm. Still, in time, I will fall to madness, and you will vanquish me. The cycle will repeat. So it goes. There's another cycle right there. Now, the interesting part about this, right, is there was this whole bit about, you know, the aspects, and they had, like, their own storyline, and that was supposedly all brought to a close in Cataclysm, where it was revealed that the purpose of the Dragonflights, like, the purpose of the aspects, was to keep this one true timeline intact, yes, but it was in order to prevent the Hour of Twilight. Once they had performed that, they were done. Their task was done. Their task was finished, and it was left to the Age of Mortals, where we're supposed to take over and keep doing whatever it is we're doing, because apparently it's working correctly. That always struck me as a little weird, because, I don't know, there was something about it that felt almost anticlimactic, you know what I mean?
I honestly, one of the first things I thought when I heard that was that if the old gods knew about this, which obviously they did, because they corrupted Deathwing... You know?
Well, here's the thing, is the reason the aspects came about in the first place was because of Galakrond, and Galakrond was very obviously corrupted by the old gods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but here's my thinking, like, in terms of all this, in terms of the Hour of Twilight, if you need to if you want to warp time and you want to change history so that you win, and you've got this dragon who's totally going to stop you, get him to give up his power. Get the aspects to say, okay, we're done, we've prevented the Hour of Twilight. Give them an Hour of Twilight to prevent... And then go on your way. And they can't stop you anymore.
What did they expend the last of their powers on? Stopping Deathwing. What had happened to Deathwing? He was completely corrupted by the old gods. It was almost like a checkmate of sorts. Because they were like, okay, here's this monstrous, hugely powerful thing. Use all your powers to get rid of it. Cool. You're no longer a piece on the board.
And you'll even notice that when we have Xavius, who goes back to the original War of the Ancients... is clearly a satyr, so he's corrupted. He was created by that way by Sargeras, so he's bound to the Legion. But he's been listening to the old gods for like millennia now. He's been doing their bidding. He was the Nightmare Lord. He is the Nightmare Lord. What does he do? Like he immediately goes after Ysera,
mm-hmm.
And now she's dead. That's he got rid of the aspect who was the biggest threat to their plans, bar none.
Yeah,
like she, you know. Now we've got, you know, all the hints are that, you know, supposedly we've purged the Emerald Nightmare. At the end of the raid, we're told that we've purged it. But there's definitely a sense of...
There's that void seed still.
Yeah, not there's a little void seed in the back of the... And the thing is like, Ysera's spirit appears and walks over to it. Like, she'll lead you right to it under the tree.
What's interesting about that, too, is if you're a Shadow Priest, your weapon actually reacts to that.
It'll talk to you, yeah.
It talks to you about that particular thing, like, of that seed. Like, Renee walked over, she's like, my artifact's talking to me. Oh my god, my artifact, what does this mean? What does this mean? And it was just one of those moments where, like, even it recognizes that it's not completely gone.
Well, they even intimate, like, its dialogue intimates that N'Zoth is awake now, because he was dreaming.
So
he was dreaming to infiltrate the Emerald Dream, and once we defeated the Emerald Nightmare, he woke up.
What's interesting to me here is, and this is something that's been interesting to me in a couple other games, Dark Souls and Skyrim in particular, where the idea of a cycle, basically, there's this planned cycle for what's supposed to happen. There's this timeline that is supposed to happen, but somewhere along the line, something kind of kicks a hitch in the wheel, so to speak, and sort of like loops it back to the originating point. So you get stuck in this endless cycle of you keep going, you keep going, you keep going, you hit this point never occurs, or the point does occur, but it routes you off that main path and then loops you back to the beginning. And then everything just continues on this endless loop.
I have one sentence to say.
Go ahead. Okay.
and Anne will at least recognize it. I don't know if you've seen the movie or not, but if you have, you'll get it. Dormammu, I'm here to bargain.
Oh, yeah.
That's basically, that's a perfect example. But like, even in, but like going back to like just video games in general, like Dark Souls was, you had the Age of Ancients, you had the Age of Fire, and then there was supposed to be the Age of Dark, which was supposed to be the Age of Mortals. And there's this big thing where as you play the games, your decision is whether to keep the current cycle going, which is the Age of Flame, where people don't want to give up that power, don't want to succumb to sort of whatever inevitability that fate has, and thus continue the cycle of corruption of the world around you. Same thing with Skyrim, with the giant ancient dragon who decides that he's not going to eat the world anymore. He wants to rule it. It's the same thing. There's this hitch that comes through, and the world becomes more corrupted as a result of it. So the Age of Dragons sort of bleeds into the Age of Mortals. And I'm wondering if something similar is happening, like sort of happens or happened in the past with Azeroth, with maybe, just maybe, we were stuck in a perpetual cycle and we didn't know it. And maybe the events that have occurred have actually broken us out of that perpetual cycle, so that maybe we are actually starting to proceed down the actual sort of fated timeline, I guess would be the best way to phrase it. And I'm kind of curious if that's actually what's going to happen.
So here's where we're going to jump a little bit, because we need to talk about the Infinite Dragonflight. Obviously, the catalyst of the Infinite Dragonflight, we don't know exactly when that happened.
Well, because when it happened is immaterial. It happened in the future.
It happened at some point, and when it did, it created this splinter faction of dragons who were supposedly working towards... They were helping the old gods, and they were trying to bring about the Hour of Twilight. And they were doing that by messing with time ways and things like that, because they had the powers of the Bronze Dragonflight.
Were they ever, though? I mean, the only time we see them even interacting with the old gods is, the end of time dungeon, where they're flat out trying to stop you from doing anything. It's one of the weird things with the Infinite Dragonflight. And I know you and I talked about it before. I even wrote, like, way back, I wrote a thing about, you know, there's a, when you do the original Caverns of Time,
right?
And you're doing, try to remember the name. I think it's Beyond the Dark Portal. You're doing that dungeon.
Yeah.
And the last boss, Aeonus is his name, I think.
I believe no, he was the Black Morass.
Yeah, it's Black Morass is the one I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, Black Morass in opening the Dark Portal.
Yes.
Is that the one you're talking about? Yeah, yes. That was Aeonus.
When he shows up, he says, I believe the exact quote is, you know, we're here to shatter this clockwork universe.
Something like that, yeah.
And if you think about it this way, we only assume that they're in league with the old gods because, you know, they're weird time dragons that seem to be complete photo negatives of the Bronze Dragonflight. For all we know, they're the entire Bronze Dragonflight. Because when Nozdormu goes, who's to say he doesn't convince the entire Bronze Dragonflight to come with him? They're his flight. Why wouldn't they listen to him? If he says, no, guys, time is broken. We messed up. We have to fix this. I was misled, and we have to go back and fix things. Who's to say they don't all go with him? That's the thing, is we know he will become Murazond, so we don't know when they're from. We know they're from our future, but we don't know how far into our future they're from. It's really...
And I mean,
love
it
that
says, even in the Dungeon Journal, though, in the Dungeon Journal it says that Nozdormu was tricked by the old gods into trying to subvert his mortality. He tried to do what he wasn't supposed to do. He tried to prevent his own death, and in doing so, he shattered the time ways.
And what's really weird, though, is he's since seen his own death.
Yeah, he has.
He knows exactly how it's going to go.
Well, I mean, he saw his death the moment he was given those powers. He was shown his own death in an attempt to basically remind him, yeah, you are mortal, you know, despite the fact that you have all of these powers, it doesn't mean that you can't die, and, you know, remind him of his responsibility. But I know, like, in Thrall, Twilight of the Aspects, in that book in particular, Thrall goes on a search to find Nozdormu, because he's still lost. He's still lost in these timelines. And that's been an ongoing theme throughout World of Warcraft, pretty much. Nobody knows where Nozdormu is. He's lost somewhere. They have no way to find him. They have no way to contact him. Occasionally he'll show up and say something, but then he just disappears again. You know, there's no real sense of where he's at. And Thrall finds him, and he discovers that the reason that Nosdormu has been hiding is because he's been trying to figure out a way to fix this whole infinite dragon flight thing, right? And that the whole reason that the old gods tricked him into trying to subvert his own mortality, it was basically so that he wouldn't be able to stop the Hour of Twilight. They wanted to try and erase Thrall from history because Thrall was such an integral part in stopping Ultraxion, stopping the Hour of Twilight from happening. If he hadn't been there to take the place of Deathwing, we would have been, I mean, Azeroth would be gone right now.
Which is really interesting here. Let me actually read Aeonus' entire quote. And then I'm going to read something that is mentioned after the quote when you look it up on Wowpedia. The time has come to shatter this clockwork universe forever. Let us no longer be slaves of the hourglass. I warn you, those who do not embrace the greater path shall become victims of its passing. It is worth noting this quote was partially stolen from Medivh.
Yeah.
Which... Medivh is the guy who originally started this whole cycle thing. He's the one who says the shade of Medivh is the one who says it. Is it the Echo of Medivh? The Echo of Medivh,
it's
right?
It's the Echo of Medivh. Says, the other interesting part is, you know, back in Warcraft 3, when at the end of, well, it's the end of, is it Reign of Chaos? I think it's the end of Reign of Chaos. When Archimonde gets blown up and the tree's all better and everything, and then you have that lovely cinematic with Medivh's voiceover, one of the things that he says, the hope for future generations has always resided in mortal hands, and now that my task is done, I'll take my place among the legends of the past. So, first off, it feels like Medivh is trying to say, yeah, let's just kick off that whole Age of Mortals thing, only it's not time to do that yet. Secondly, he says that he's going to take his place among the legends of the past. Okay, that's fine. Does that mean that he's just going to disappear from existence? Or does that literally mean that he's going back in time somewhere?
That's an interesting point. I don't know. But one of the things that's fascinating about all this, it ties around... One of the thing I really wanted to mention, because we were talking about how Thrall is so necessary for everything to avoid the Hour of Twilight and the old gods. You guys ever watch Gargoyles?
Yeah.
Do you remember the thing they called the Xanatos Gambit?
Yep, the Xanatos Gambit is a classic for a reason.
Okay, Joe, tell us about the Xanatos Gambit for the people who... Because you haven't done much talking, and I'm sorry. So tell us about the Xanatos Gambit so that our audience knows what it is, because maybe they haven't seen the show.
It's a plan for which all foreseeable outcomes benefit the creator. So basically, Xanatos was the big bad during the Gargoyles show, and he was eternally linked with one of the characters so that he couldn't die unless they killed each other. It was all convoluted and wibbly wobbly type stuff. But every plan that he ever put into motion, no matter what happened, he won. It didn't matter if he defeated you or somebody else defeated him or whatever the case was. It all fed into this massive plan. And this included things that were like superficially appeared to be a failure for him would like a year down the road turn out to be that was also part of a different plan to make something else happen. This is a classic trope that famous villains have had throughout all the years. You may notice that this is something similar to, if you've read comic books, that Lex Luthor has happened most of the time.
So basically, even the failures are actually
even the failures
successes.
Are victories. Exactly.
You just don't know that they're victories until years down the road when it comes back to bite you in the butt.
Yep. Yeah, and
okay.
It's like
Rossi,
a doctor.
Go ahead.
Dr. Doom is famous for doing this kind of thing too. But the reason I mentioned that is because Doom had a time machine.
Yep.
If you now let's look at it this way. We set up the whole idea that the old gods created the original time distortion to draw Nosdormu in, to get, you know, to change history, and also to get Nosdormu occupied trying to stop the infinite dragonflight and thus busy so he couldn't stop the Hour of Twilight. But what if the Hour of Twilight itself is just yet more of their plan? It doesn't matter. If they fail to stop it, great, we get out. If they successfully stop it, well, they had to travel back to the War of the Ancients again to do this.
Yep.
Keep in mind, we didn't just go back to the War of the Ancients in the War of the Ancients novels and create that alternate timeline. We later then went back again to get the Dragon Soul to stop Deathwing. We've now been back and forth between that period of time and our own like four times.
And Nosdormu was very quick to point out at the end of Dragon Soul, if you spoke to him, he said that the Dragon Soul, the thing that you took, it basically vanished and went back to the correct timeline or whatever, now that everything was all fixed. But did it really? I mean, here's the thing, right? we have this whole bit with the Infinite Dragonflight where supposedly they're working for the old gods, and they've got this whole thing going on where they're trying to prevent, they're trying to keep the Hour of Twilight, like, keep that happening. They want it to happen. They're working towards that end. Yet, after everything is all said and done and Cataclysm is over, we go through Mists of Pandaria, and at the end of Mists of Pandaria, when Garrosh Hellscream is on trial and he's broken out by Kairos Dormu, who is a bronze dragon at this point, Kairos Dormu and his allies are helped by members of the Infinite Dragonflight. They're still around. So if they aren't working to make sure that Hour of Twilight happens, because obviously it didn't happen, what are they working on now? What are they working towards?
Well, from their perspective, it hasn't happened yet, maybe, because, I mean, they're from the future anyway. So they're still going back in time to alter the past, even though, from our perspective, we've successfully stopped them.
What they're doing is they're creating an opportunity for Garrosh to go to Draenor.
No. What they're really doing is creating an opportunity for Kairos Dormu to be murdered on Draenor and lose control of this little time artifact and create a possibility for an infinite planes of existence to be open to them at once, thus maybe giving the Tower Dragonflight. See, that's what gets me about this. They went out of their way to say that he wasn't specifically a member of the Infinite Dragonflight. Do you remember that?
Yeah, because he said, one of his last things that he said was, I will become infinite. He's trying to become one of them.
Or more than that. Because if he knows Murazond is dead from his perspective and his time frame, Murazond needs replacing.
So he wants to be that replacement?
We know that aspects could be replaced, right?
The part that kills me about this, though, is the fact that he's dead. Because now we'll never know. We'll never know exactly what he was doing, trying to accomplish here.
A Kairos Dharma is dead.
Yeah, it's not to say we can't go back again, like we've done multiple times already.
Yeah, but is that really, given everything that we know about time travel so far, is that really a good idea? Is time travel one of those things we should be touching, or should we just, like, leave it be? Because Warlords of Draenor, I'm going to bump forward here a little bit, right? Okay, Warlords of Draenor was a little bit different. We went to, basically, an alternate reality is what it was. It was a different reality in which the Horde hadn't gone through the Dark Portal yet. They hadn't conquered Azeroth or anything like that. And in that alternate reality was in the past. So we not only traversed universes, we traversed time. But since we were in that own little, like, pocket universe, what we did in that pocket universe, it isn't affecting our own timeline at all. Like, not in any way.
Well, no, it is affecting our timeline in some ways, but only in the way that...
Because we brought Gul'dan through, but beyond that, though,
well,
that's
here's
like...
Do we know that, like, here's like the weirdest thing about that whole thing. It's bothered me ever since. If all the demons exist out in the Twisting Nether and they're the same demons, whether they're in that timeline or our timeline, did we inform them of the outcome of things by running into them 30 years ago?
Like, I don't know.
That's like, is this basically us giving them a great big hint that this is how it's going
to go? We've just given you a big heads up on how to conquer us.
You're not going to win, so you should try a different tactic. Or in this case, you should try the exact same tactic, but with a lot more demon. You're saying we need more demons. That's always what you think I'm saying. Yes, well, I have a lot of demons.
We have so many demons we can throw at this puny world. It's all good. They just needed an opportunity to do that. And in order to do that, they needed Gul'dan. I'm assuming they needed Gul'dan. See, that's the thing that always kind of like bugs me about Warlords of Draenor, is the only thing that we took from Warlords of Draenor, the only thing that carried over was Gul'dan. Mm-hmm. That was it. He came over and opened up the way for the Legion to come to our world. So did Kairos know this when he took Garrosh there? Did Kairos know that this was going to happen? Did the old gods know that this was going to happen? Was this actually part of... Because you have the Infinite Dragonflight, they're supposedly being influenced by the old gods, but they're performing a task that theoretically is helping the Burning Legion. So what's the ultimate purpose here? And Joe, I'm going to let you talk again, because you haven't gotten to talk a lot.
No, and that's fine. It's one of those things where I don't know what the ultimate purpose is, because it is so weird that Gul'dan was the only piece moved, right? Like, it was really the only piece that mattered. And it's like, to what end? Like, is if do they just want the Legion to take over Azeroth? But even better, do they just want us to have a different target? And here's where I mentioned this a while ago. And the only thing that I can really think of is that they're okay with this, and this serves their purpose, because we are going to leave the planet. We are going to go somewhere that isn't Azeroth. The greatest heroes of Azeroth, the ones that have defeated every evil plan, are once again leaving this planet. And we're going to be going, we don't know how far away Argus is, really. Like, it could be infinity away. It could be, you know, years and years and years of space travel. Or it could be like, you know, you pop over there. It could also be a case where we get there and we get stranded. We don't know. We don't know if the Exodar is going to be able to, like, remain flight worthy on the way back, or how we're going to get back and forth, or if the portal anchors that Illidan left in place are going to be able to be activated. And I think that is actually more likely their plan. If we're not there to stop them, they have run of the place. They can do whatever they want, mostly unopposed, because the greatest heroes, the greatest threat to them, are removed. We're no longer there to stop them. And maybe that was it. Maybe that was the entire thing all along, was, like Rossi said earlier in this podcast, we're the only things they fear, because we touch the chaos and the order. We are both. We are embodiments of both. And if they can't remove us and kill us, then they need to remove us by giving us something different to focus on that isn't them.
Okay, I have a question for you guys, for both of you. Obviously, according to the whispers of Giant Flesh Eyeball in Emerald Nightmare, Ilganoth, he says that flesh was the gift and, you know, our creator gave it to us, that kind of, you know, he's going through all of this stuff, and you can't really take what the old gods say too seriously, because they could be lying. But the thing is I don't think that they've ever really lied to us.
They don't need to.
They don't need to. They've told, flat out told us the truth, because the truth is 10 times more horrifying than any lie would ever be. We're being pitted against the Burning Legion, right? All of this machination with the Infinite Dragonflight working to take Garrosh wherever, what that ultimately resulted in was the Legion coming to Azeroth, and everything that's happening in World of Warcraft Legion right now. It's us against the Legion. What if we aren't actually fighting the Legion to protect our world so much as the old gods have been cultivating us as their own little army, the thing that's capable of defeating the Burning Legion, so that they can more easily conquer the universe?
I would buy that if they fear the Legion, but they don't fear the Legion. I mean, maybe you're the reason they don't fear the Legion. Maybe.
It's a thing that they kind of want to, like, get rid of, because, you know, it's like a mosquito or something like that. But what if the reason that we've been given the curse of flesh and the old gods aren't trying to destroy us, they're trying to cultivate us and use us as a weapon against this thing that is bothering them?
I think it's the middle against the ends, right? Because
yeah,
look at some of the major run-ins we've had with old gods in the past. Immediately following those run-ins with the old gods, something else major has happened to divert our attention. You kill C'Thun, and then all of a sudden we have agents of the Lich King coming down that we need to go ahead and take care of. Or, you know, Kil'jaeden coming out of the Sunwell, or whatever the case is.
Agents of the Lich King, and the Lich King was originated by the
Burning Legion. So Kil'jaeden, I'm wondering,
coming out of the Sunwell, he's with the Legion. Mm-hmm. Like, every time we have any kind of victory against the old gods,
the Legion seems to pop up.
Almost immediately afterwards. And the only exception to that was that when we defeated the Lich King, we jumped immediately into Cataclysm, and Deathwing was a pawn of the old gods. Mm-hmm. Now, was that like them playing their hand too early, or was that, again, part of this whole Xanatos Gambit type thing? I guess what I'm trying to ask here is, obviously, the timeline has shifted, whether we think about it too much or not. When Nosdormu sent Ronan and Crassus and Roxagar back in time, that created a splinter, and that splinter carried forward. When we were sent back again to retrieve the dragon soul, did that create another splinter? We don't know, because according to Nosdormu, you know, it was returned and things were set back right. Okay, if it was set back right, but it was set back right as according to that splinter that was created when Crassus and Proxagar and Ronan were sent back in time. So we've got all of these little fractures and junctures and things, these little pockets of existence that are created by time. Which ones are actually affecting us, and how are those, like, were those all catalysts of the old gods, or were those something that Nozorma was doing by himself? Rossi, what do you think?
Basically, one of the things I was thinking while you guys were talking is that I don't think the old gods are grooming us to be their army, because they have armies that they can just spawn whenever they want to. The Curse of Flesh is pretty seriously, obviously intended to just make us something that they can deal with. They can't consume Titanforge creatures.
That they can deal with, and also something that they can inevitably control. Yeah.
But the controlling thing is certainly something that they do with people. They drive people crazy and control them. But one of the things I find most fascinating is people like Helya and other Titanforged, who have, like Loken. Loken was never affected by the Curse of Flesh, and Yogg-Saron found a way to manipulate him. In a way, the Titans' perfect creations are the most vulnerable. I think this is a situation where the old gods may have intended the Curse of Flesh to do one thing, but it actually does more than that. Because the Curse of Flesh is their gift. They're not kidding. Flesh is, living flesh is something that is not in the Titans' plans for things. Originally,
it's chaos.
Because it is chaotic by nature. It's a living thing. It changes and grows. I think that the old gods, they embody that corruption aspect, but they don't embody life. Life transcends that. And that's the thing. By being living things, the fleshy beings of Azeroth are as much beyond the old gods as they are beyond the Titans, and thus beyond the Legion, because the Legion are
so ultimately... The Curse of Flesh, rather than being a source of corruption as may have been intended, was actually like a vaccination?
Well, it makes us dangerous to both sides. We can oppose Algolon and beat him. And keep in mind, Algolon could wipe out all life on Azeroth, and we stopped him. We beat Algolon. We beat him despite it being impossible. And that means we can do the impossible. And if you can do the impossible, that's as much a danger to the old gods as it is to anybody. Yes, so in a way they're playing with fire. And because they're crazy, that's not a problem. They're creatures of pure insanity. That's not a problem for them to play with fire. But at the same time, we are a danger to them as well. So I do think that all the time stuff goes back to this idea of if things progress as they're supposed to progress, the old gods don't win. Because if that were the case, they wouldn't do it.
Well,
and that's trying to be orderly. You know, I'm going to shut up in a little second. It's trying to impose order on chaotic thought patterns, and that's the problem here. These are things that don't think like we do.
Here's my question. What is the only condition in which the old gods lose? The only condition in which the old god loses is if Azeroth either is birthed into a full Titan or is destroyed. Why? Because their ultimate win condition is to corrupt Azeroth into a void Titan. That's been their game plan since day one. And to me, all the stuff, all the posturing is a Xanathos Gambit, because all they're doing is keeping us in between the Legion and Azeroth. Because while they may not fear the Legion, the only thing that they do fear, potentially, at least in my eyes, would be the destruction of Azeroth. What is the Legion hell-bent on doing? Destroying Azeroth. Who's the only one fighting them back and has been every single time the old gods have piped up, and then the Legion's like, oh god, the old gods are, you know, everybody's weak, let's go swoop in. Ah, darn it, heroes again. We are, one way or another, whether we were being controlled by them, by being their actual legions of armies, or despite the fact that we have free will and we're like, this is our planet, nobody's going to take it from us, we are inadvertently helping them by saving Azeroth, because as long as Azeroth exists, their plan has the potential to win, because their ultimate goal is the corruption of Azeroth. And going to the timeline things, anything that keeps the timelines in a straight line where there's only one Azeroth hurts their plans. Now, if you extrapolate that, and there's the multiverse theory or the multi-timeline theory, where there are infinite Azeroths out there, there are infinite chances that the old gods have won. They don't want a strict timeline because of that. There's so many things at play here that all loop back to that same principle fact. They want Azeroth. They want her to be born a void Titan. And we are unfortunately helping them in that plan by fighting off the Legion. I hate to say it. I'm starting to agree with Sir Garrus almost.
Well, here's the problem too. The other problem is, of course, is we know based on the Scepter of Sir Garrus and other artifacts that Sir Garrus's goal, His win condition is come to Azeroth, crack it open, and get to the Titan essence inside and merge with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's that's what he wants. He's in love with Azeroth. Not us, obviously, not the planet that we have, but the Titan entity.
The world soul.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. He is obsessed with it. Love is not the right word because I don't think Sargeras loves
it. Obsession, I think, is good.
He's obsessed with it. He wants to join with it. He wants to create
it. Even that takes it away from the old gods.
Yeah, and exactly. So we're in a situation where either group's win condition is death for us. So
we're kind of caught in the middle.
Yeah, there is like an aspect of this whole thing that does make me wonder. Like, the Titans created the Titan Forged because they couldn't act on this scale. They couldn't, you know, Amon-Thul tried, and he ripped out and killed the most powerful of them, Yashaj. And when he did so, he created the Well of Eternity, which was the pure Titan arcane power, which, and I'm going to say this now because it's one of those things we now know, arcane power has control over time.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it was after the death of Yashaj and the creation of Well of Eternity that the aspects were created.
Except it was after the Titans had died.
Yeah. No, yeah, it was.
Yeah, because they weren't there for it. Tyr just imbued them with these different powers.
Wait a minute, though. We're not 100% on that, because Tyr and the others asked the Titans for help, and the Titans responded.
Right, but was it the Titans that responded because they were alive, or was it the last essences of the Titans on Azeroth?
Well, we don't know, because that's the way it's presented in Chronicle. That, you know, it doesn't. It definitely
it's kind of up in the air. And it's kind of up in the air with the short story about Galakrond. Well, the novella about Galakrond too.
Yeah.
But
one of the things to think about is if the Titans were destroyed when they empowered the aspects, that's interesting because it means they can still respond, which would kind of throw off. Why would Loken be so despondent then? Loken was despondent because he couldn't get the Titans to respond to him anymore.
But if the Titans knew that he was touched or you know, under the eyes of the old gods, maybe they wouldn't have responded.
Yeah, it's one of those weird things. But the thing is, he wouldn't have been despairing if after that had happened, because he started falling because he felt the weird change when the Titans' essences entered him. Because he got, like, you know, him and Mimiron got, you know, Golgoneth's essence hit them. And he was like, what? What was that? And that's when he started going. But if after that had happened, he reached out to the Titans and they were like, yes, we will empower these people for you. Then he'd be like, oh, well, they're fine. I just talked to them. That's everything's fine. So, you know what I'm saying? Narratively, that doesn't make sense, but we're not clear on this. I can't say with clarity that they weren't already destroyed when they empowered the aspects. But at any rate, we know that the Well of Eternity was formed before the aspects were created. The magic began leaking out, and they had to start ordering Azeroth. And it's Tyr, isn't it? It's Tyr who says, my brethren and I have become too distant from actual life.
Yeah, I think so.
And so if you think about it, there's this whole aspect of life that you know, some of the Watchers don't even like. Like, Odin is like, no, that stuff's gross. The fleshy thing, where you have actual fleshy things, no, I don't like that. I want all Titan Forged to be in charge. No, non-corrupted, even better bodies, Titan Forged. And I'm going to create weird undead ghost things to make sure I have these, you know, this army of Titan Forged, because I just don't trust you guys with your fleshy bits.
Okay, so going back to Nosdormu and the creation of the Infinite Dragonflight and the death of Murazond and everything else, obviously when Nosdormu was made into an aspect and charged with this whole, you know, keeping the one true timeline, that was part of a cycle. And he mentions that. I mean, he mentions that when Murazond dies, he says that cycle is closed and it'll keep going. It'll repeat, so it goes. So he's under the understanding that, yes, there are several cycles out there. This cycle that Nosdormu was sworn to protect, is it the same one that we're dealing with in Legion, or is it a completely separate thing?
I think it was a completely separate thing, yeah.
What was the purpose of that cycle, and was it, in fact, actually, like, resolved satisfactorily? Because yes, we defeated Murazond, and yes, we brought the Dragon Soul forward. We were able to prevent the Hour of Twilight from happening and everything else. But at the same time, it didn't really seem to save anything, did it? Because we're still in danger. We're still in danger from the Legion, and it's also incredibly apparent in Legion that we're still in danger from the old gods. the Emerald Nightmare is still a thing. We haven't put a halt to whatever it is the old gods are doing. We just put a halt to that one particular cycle. So how many cycles are there? Is there an infinite number? Is that why the infinite dragonflight is still a factor? Are we going to see them again? What do you guys think?
I think that there isn't a potentially an infinite number of cycles just based off of the fact that we have shattered sort of the rule of the timeline, and now that there are just an infinite number of possibilities spinning out there into the void. And I think that before everything is said and done, I think we will see the infinite dragonflight again.
What about you, Rossi?
I think that if we go back to the original question about, you know, the rift that caught Nosdormu that seems to have started this all off, and Illidan, the magic he was casting, and why the old gods
way back. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
When you look at that, when you think about what's actually happening, and the fact that we've gone back to the War of the Ancients so many times, we're in the War of the Ancients right now on the Broken Isles.
Oh yeah.
Because the Suramar deal, that's, you know, they're a holdover. There's a book series. I'm not really a big David Eddings fan, but he has a book series basically, not his Belgorod stuff, but he has a book series about a character who is effectively divorced from fate. He has no fate. He has no destiny. He's called Anaka. And one of the points of that book is that something happened in the past that basically knocked everything off of its tether. And now with the death of a main character, everything is set back on its path again. History is reset. Which Joe mentioned this before when he was talking about video games and so forth. I think the fact that we are basically retreading the events of the War of the Ancients without time traveling to them, we're basically getting to see their legacy. We're basically having the chickens have come home to roost, so to speak.
It's like an echo of it, almost.
Yeah, it's like literally it's like someone once said, you know,
because Suramar was removed. It wasn't removed from time, obviously, because time progressed in that little bubble, but it was removed from the rest of the world enough that everyone that's in there is kind of in the same mindset that they were during the War of the Ancients.
Yeah, and when you have an ageless people who are basically subsisting on pure magic, these things happen. But it's just fascinating to me to think about the idea that all of these places are sort of divorced from they haven't moved along with us, even though that they've had their own stuff going on. Like Val Shirah and Azuna in particular. Azuna, everybody's a freaking ghost, you know? Azuna, they're upset that, you know, living things are living in their ancient cities because now their cities are changed. And, you know, meanwhile, here you guys are ghosts. Of course, you know, you're dead. You're not supposed to be here at all. And you've been held that way because of this relic. I mean, you know, and we're seeing it over and over again. It's like the plot of Legion is that nothing has ended. Like the entire War of the Ancients was the entire 10,000 years since the War of the Ancients has basically just been a breather. And now it starts up again. Like even the Illidan bit where he's getting his eyes burned out by Sargeras and he sees the true power of the Legion is another reminder of, you know, they're just going to keep coming. They just, if we stop them this time, they'll come again. They don't care. They will just keep throwing stuff at us. And it basically points out to the futility of the cycle. Yes, it's a cycle, but it's one that we have to break because we can't win this way.
Except that at the same time, and we're going to go back to Illidan here, when Lightheart shows you Illidan's birth, Zero makes a comment and says that Illidan's life was full of potential, his destiny forged in the Great Ordering and cast to the cosmic winds, where at last it would find a home on Azeroth. Within the tiny vessel, the Great Cycle began anew. This is a different cycle. How many cycles are there?
That's the thing is, I don't think it is a different cycle.
Is
I think
it the
it's
same cycle on repeat?
Well, here's the thing is, I think that these things are all microcosms of the larger struggle for the ordering of the entire cosmos. You've got the Great Cycle, which is basically the entire struggle of the cosmos to become ordered from its chaotic nothingness state, like, you know, light and darkness. If you were to use the Diablo 3 cosmology, which is very heavily Manichaean, there's that point where the Diamond Warrior and Tathamet destroy each other. And from that, all existence comes about. At some point in the past, existence came about. And the void has been trying to make that stop ever since. You have the light and the void ultimately struggling. That's the Great Cycle. And all these other cycles are just that cycle playing out in microcosm. They're just different versions of that.
So Illidan's life is part of that.
He's part of that in that it's a recreation of it. It's like you look at fractals and you see a tiny fractal shape and then you can blow it up and see it again.
Or ripples in the water, that kind of thing. Okay.
It's really fascinating to think about the idea that Illidan himself is just... look at him. He's fell corrupted. He's got the old gods whispering at him. He is Azeroth.
He is, which is kind of weird to think about. Well, I think that kind of wraps us up for today. Unless, Joe, did you have any more commentary on that particular topic?
No, I think we've covered it pretty sufficiently.
Okay. All right.
I'm sad we didn't talk more about Ashara, though.
And that's okay. We can leave that next for time. Another time. But, David, I don't know if that addresses your question or not, but we sure had a lot of fun talking about it, so there's that. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And for you guys that are listening right now, if you want to know more about Illidan, you can learn more about him in the novel Illidan by William King. That's the one that came out with Legion. We are offering a free audiobook download. Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you guys the opportunity to check out their service. And you can actually get Illidan as part of that 30-day trial. So if this is a book that you haven't checked out yet, you probably should, because there's a lot of Legion lore in there. And you can download many of Blizzard's other titles as well as Illidan and plenty of other books besides by going to blizzardwatch.com/audible and just signing up for your trial. I think we got off the subject of time travel, but that's okay because a lot of this whole time travel that we've been talking about has all tied into the old gods. So here's my closing question for you guys. Obviously, Amon-Thul, he imbued Nosdormu with the ability to watch over the timeline and make sure the one true timeline came to pass. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, we have the old gods who corrupted Nosdormu, and they've been using that whole timeline to their own end. Who has the correct timeline? Is there really a correct timeline at all? Rossi, go.
That's one of the things I've always wondered about. Like, is it the correct timeline just because they say so? Like, you know, this is the one we want, so it's correct. You don't really know. But I do think, honestly and sincerely, I do think that we're past the point of being able to shepherd it. I think we've gone into we're in a post-time way watching phase. I honestly do think the old gods tricked Nosdormu and the other aspects into giving up their powers. I think that it was a Xanatos gambit. The entire Hour of Twilight was a great big, okay, save the world, and now you can't stop us.
Okay. Joe, what do you think?
Honestly, I'm with Rossi on this one. I can't think of anything else to add to it.
Do you think that there's one true timeline, or do you think that the old gods and or the Titans were just picking the aspect that worked best for them?
I think that's more it. I think that they were just picking the one that worked best for them. I don't know. I don't necessarily know that there is a true timeline. I don't know if there can be.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys, for tuning in. As always, if you have any questions for Lore Watch, you can email us at podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Just be sure to put Lore Watch in the subject line so we know which show it's actually intended for. Thanks for listening, and we will see you guys in 2 weeks.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.